Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Namaste, Yoga Revealed Podcast. This is Alec Vishal Rubin, and it is a gift to be revealing yoga with you. Just as you go out to the world and shine your light so bright, we are so excited to be sharing with you some of the most inspired wisdom keepers and light warriors here in the yoga world. I am here in London, spreading my heart and seeing all beings with kind eyes as I embark through a master's degree program at SOAS University, pursuing a master's in traditions of yoga and meditation. Along the way, I'm meeting so many amazing beings like yourself. And if you live here in London, feel free to get in touch with me. I'd love to connect with you. Today, I have a special guest to introduce to you, Niraj Shah, who founded London's Meditation Unlocked Group, which is all about slowing the moment down and getting quiet in the monkey mind. This is for the businessman and the entrepreneur who feel like they might not have time to meditate during the day. Check out this episode and stay tuned for more.
Namaste, Yoga Revealed Podcast. It is so lovely to be back online with you. This is Alec Vishal Rubin, and I'm super grateful to be tuning in with you today on the podcast. So I'm here in London, and I have moved to London. I've been here for the last 7 weeks, and truth be told, I've just landed in my heart after an initiation rite of moving across the planet and feeling London's frequency and leaving my tribe, leaving everything that I know in comfort to explore myself. And that is really the essence of today's podcast, exploring ourselves through the practice of meditation. So, you know, when scrolling on your phone, sometimes you see these inspiring people who are creating an amazing offering to the greater communities. And I think that's one of the beauties of social media. So here's Alec. I'm sitting at home one night just looking at the London yoga scene, and I stumble across this thing called Meditation Unlocked. And I was like, huh, that's curious. What is that? And I meet this guy online, and his name's Niraj, and I reach out. And, you know, it's the beauty of high-tech technology. So here I am sitting across from Niraj Shah. Is your name right?
You did.
Yep. Oh, great. And he's a beautiful brother, and we're here in London, and I'm so excited to host him on the podcast to share his story of yoga and meditation and how he's created a platform of exploring ourselves through the practice of meditation. So, Niraj, it's so nice to meet you, brother. Thank you for being here.
Welcome to London, Alec. I'm super excited to be here. I'm grateful. I've seen the guys you've interviewed over the last just 12 months, and I look at the names like Rod Stryker and Dylan Werner, my friend Matt Giordano, and I am so excited to be in that company. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, so sweet, man. Yeah, it's a pleasure to meet people who are also involved in a lifestyle where coming here, I don't know many people, and it's like, okay, I'm calling in the mindfulness practitioners, the people who are invested in self-discovery, and just sharing an hour-long conversation, not only with the podcast community, but every time, I've always gained so much from them, so I'm super excited to see what we dive in. And yeah, you know, the first question that we always ask everyone is, how was yoga first revealed to you? What's your story?
How long have you got? I'll give you the shortest version. So I'm British, but I'm of Indian origin. My parents are immigrants from East Africa. So I was born in the UK. I grew up here. Yoga, if we talk about the physical practice, was first revealed to me as a child. Growing up in the UK's Hindu community, I was probably around 4, maybe 5 years old. The first time I did a Surya Namaskar, I was chanting Sanskrit mantras. I don't know if that means yoga was revealed to me, though. That's two different things. That all faded away as I moved into adolescence and discovered things like going out and drinking and so on and so forth. And it came back to me. I had quite a sudden experience. So I had a corporate career for a number of years, and I learned how to invest in businesses alongside that. That career took me to Hong Kong and back, and it was, you know, it was something that I was pretty good at, but I didn't feel was doing anything great for the world. And I got to my late 20s and started thinking about, what am I really doing here? What am I here for? And I was a headhunter for investment banks, and I really enjoyed it, but post-credit crunch, I really started questioning it. You know, what is the utility of this? And I decided, actually, I'd come back to London by this point. I was working with, I'd been lucky to work with really great companies I really learned loads from, and people that I enjoyed learning from and looked up to and respected. And for the first time, I post-credit crunch, I'd come back to London. I was working with people who I couldn't respect, even though it was a financially successful company, and just decided, actually, my life has got to be about more than this. And by this point, I was really interested in health and really interested in technology. So I decided I'm going to leave my corporate career and start my own business, and started looking into these areas. And a couple of months into that process, at the age of 30, I had a stroke out of nowhere. And this is something that has I've written about. It's been covered in other interviews, but in the interests of where we want to focus with this, It came out of nowhere and we don't know the cause, but I'm very, very lucky to be sitting here having this conversation with you, just having my physical capability, having my mental capability. I mean, that's debatable, but, but I get by. So my neurologist, he said a couple of things to me, which were, one, never miss a day of medication in your life, and two, until I've made a full physical recovery, I can only do yoga. That was it. So I took that very seriously, and we have a beautiful Iyengar center not far from where I live. So I enrolled myself in a 6-week course over there. Like, you go once a week for 6 weeks, like a foundation course. My mother-in-law is a very experienced yoga teacher and yoga therapist. So she spoke with me a little bit. I had my childhood practice. And those three things is what got me going. And I still remember that first ever asana practice. Afterwards, I felt, I wouldn't say that I felt good, because I wasn't in a place where I felt good in my life, given what had just happened. I'd just about relearned how to walk and things like that. But I knew that I'd given my body, I think that whoever was leading that practice, I can't remember who it was, but they said something that resonated with me, which was, you've just given a gift to your body. And that is exactly what I felt had happened. So from there, it became something I did 2 or 3 times a week at home after I'd done that course. I didn't really want to be around people. I was in quite a dark place mentally. And I started practicing 2 or 3 times a week at home. And it was only 18 months later, when I started my first business, that it became a daily practice, because suddenly I found that 20 or 30 minutes of physical yoga practice at night would really help me sleep. It would. I was practicing at midnight, 1 a.m. when I was done, and it became this really amazing period between my working life and my ability to rest. And I think that was a start of yoga. I talk about yoga and meditation for me at the basic level being like entrepreneurial secret weapons, and that was very much the starting point for that. So that I think it was from that point on that I really integrated the practice into my life, and it's been a habit ever since.
Wow, what an amazing health journey that is.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm so grateful as well that you're sitting here across from me, and I know that studio that you're talking about, it's very beautiful. And I'm curious, you know, I think one of the first things that came up for me, you know, I think most people, we touch yoga, you know, we touch this experience and we glimpse into how it affects us in such a profound way. And like you said, maybe 2 to 3 times a week for X amount of period, you were really giving it a go. And then you had this other shift throughout that course. You're like, wow, this is strong. And this ought to be a daily integration. Yeah. What was that shift like for you?
I think it's important to point out, I think it was a reaction, because what had happened, just to give the correct chronology to this, is my physical recovery took about 6 months. And during that, it was the 2, maybe 3 times a week practice. And then I spent the next year working for a couple of startups, trying to figure out what to do, how to start my first business and so on. So this just kind of continued. And then when I finally hit upon my first business, which is in real estate, suddenly, as anybody who started their own thing would know, I was working an incredible amount of hours. By this point, I'm physically fit again. And it just suddenly made sense to me. I can't remember, at some point, really early on, I must have done a yoga practice at night, because it made instinctive sense that when I'd finished working at the desk, to have a little bit of a stretch out, because that's what it was to me at that stage. And then I slept like a rock that night. So then the next day I did it again. And before I know it, it's like 5, 6, 7 times a week. And that now, you know, I don't know how the purists will feel about this, but if my wife and I are sitting here watching a TV show or something, I'll have my yoga mat just here and have a little stretch out.
Yeah, so, yeah. That's great. Awesome. Wow. So what do you feel has been one of the most profound, maybe mental shifts from incorporating meditation into your life, which will then lead us into what inspired you to create Meditation Unlocked, thus what is Meditation Unlocked?
Sure. So it's important to point out that the main reason that I started having a bit of a stretch out every night was purely for the mental benefits. The physical side of it was just a byproduct, as far as I saw it. It was because it was starting to help me sleep, but then also I was finding the reason for that is because it was helping me clear my mind. I was connecting with myself and dropping all of this external stuff that we carry around. So where meditation came from is I had dabbled in meditation. I came across things like Headspace really early on when they were quite a young company, and thought, yeah, this is cool, but I didn't really need it at that point. And again, like with most people who come to yoga or meditation, it was a reaction again. So I was going through a particularly difficult time work-wise and life-wise. There was just a few things going on. I was feeling a bit overwhelmed. And a friend of mine said, you should try this meditation app that I've been using. So I thought, okay, let's give it a go. And so I tried this app for about a week and thought it was wonderful, because I realized that, hang on a second, I'm getting the benefits that I get from my physical practice, but I'm getting them faster, and I'm getting them without having to be somewhere where I can stretch. You know, I can do this in a lift, or I can do this whilst waiting for the tube or on the tube or whatever. And suddenly started realizing, again, this is, you know, this informs where my series comes from, because this all came from practicality rather than trying to connect to something spiritually. It was, hang on a second, if I can shift my state like this, this is going to give me huge advantages in business. So from that point on, I was hooked, and I was like, I need to dive deeper into this meditation thing. And I just, from there, just started learning, started going and seeing people. And then I'd say that from that point, it became my primary practice. And I still do both. But the one that I go to as a default is the meditation side, because that's what I can incorporate into my day much more. And I'll say that I, you know, have several meditations throughout a day now. Some are very conscious, very awake, and some are very deep and very much slipping into other states.
Wow, cool. Well, I'm excited to hopefully navigate those different states later into the conversation.
Sure. Yeah.
So that is a beautiful chronological experience of what brought forth Meditation Unlocked. And with that said, you know, what is the intention of Meditation Unlocked?
So Meditation Unlocked, actually, I should explain where it's come from, because that will inform the intention. So the first business got to a point where it was doing pretty well, and I started thinking about, do I want to scale this or not? And that's a property business, which I still have. And I thought I wanted to scale it, and then I tried to scale it, and then realized I actually didn't want to scale it. And the reasons behind that is I went into that sector as a sensible place to go, which I'm not super passionate about bricks and mortar, but I'd tried things in health and technology and hadn't really got anywhere, and it was much more of a desperation move. And desperation is a really powerful thing, you know, so it worked. And I got to a point where I was like, well, I like this enough to do it well, but I don't love it. The things that I like about the property business is I get to work with some really great people, and I get to do some really great deals, and we make some of our customers really happy. But this isn't what I wanted my life's work to be. So I decided about 2.5 years ago that health and well-being was where I wanted to be. And as I was saying to you before when we were talking, like, this is such an interesting time to come to London. And the reason I was saying that, in the last 3 years, the well-being industry here has really taken off like a rocket ship. Mm. There's so much going on. And I could see that being a consumer of that industry. You know, I was going to gym classes and healthy cafes and stuff like that, and it's starting to explode. So I decided I want to be in that space, and I spent basically a year getting to know the space, getting to know folks. Like, really, I wanted to look at everything from gyms to clothing to technology to food to, you know, think, okay, which of these do I really want to, like, work in for the next 15, 20 years? And you'll find this funny. By this point, I had never considered yoga or meditation as things that I wanted to be in from a sort of work and business point of view. Mm. And I think part of the reason for that is because I was very much outside of the yoga industry, the yoga scene, because of the way that things had developed for me. For me, it was a self-practice. It was something I did at home. And it got to a point where I was thinking, okay, I could go to a yoga class, but am I really going to take 2 to 2.5 hours out of my day to travel somewhere, do a 60 to 90 minute practice, travel back? Like, I can barely spare time to go and, like, work out at the gym or whatever, but I was doing it because it was important. So where Meditation Unlocked came from, long story short, is about a year ago, I was getting to the point where I needed to make a decision on where to go. And I came across some industry stuff around yoga and meditation. And I was like, I just remember having this epiphany of, how am I not looking at this, right? Given my background, my history, the fact the huge parts of my life, and actually the other side of me, which is the business side, the investor side, economically, this is a smart place to go because there's huge growth in these areas. And the reason for the growth is obvious. I mean, well-being as a whole, the reason I went there is because we're living longer, but we're getting sicker younger. So that means there's an awful lot to do, awful lot. So that's a global thing as well. So I remember it became really clear I should be looking at yoga and meditation. This is exactly what I should be doing. So then there was only like two real issues, which is, well, I don't know anyone in this space, and I don't know anything about how the industry is made up. So, you know, I knew like three people through just like well-being circles that I'd got to know and whatever, but I wasn't, you know, I didn't know anything about studios and retreats and like yoga product companies and tech platforms and stuff like that. So this is last summer. And that's where my other project, The Present of Yoga, came from, which is similar to yourselves. We go and interview a load of yogis from around the world, but our take on that is it's just really about demystifying business. It's very specifically about that side of things, and we just go and interview like studio owners or big name teachers to teachers you've never heard of, and we go deep. I'm really into depth, so we go deep into, well, what specifically have you done around this stuff, and we then put it online in a way that's like really, you know, it's visually attractive and people want to read it, so other yogis read it. So it was a very selfish endeavor, because what I was doing was meeting with all these people, like you're meeting with people, and just I'd sit down and say, well, how did you start your studio, and like what were the challenges, and what where's that industry going, and what's your advice to someone starting? And I was asking all these things that I wanted to know and pressing record and putting it online. but it's not lost on me that there's value in that for other people, which otherwise it would never work, right? So it was a really fun thing to do. And through that's how I got to know the yoga community. So you know, so someone like you coming into London, it might look like I know so many folks in the London yoga scene, and I do, but this is all in the last 18 months. Right. Like I didn't know, June the 1st last year, I didn't know anyone. Like June the 7th or 8th, I walked into my first studio class in 6 years. But it's been an incredible journey in terms of like deepening, widening my practice. Where Meditation Unlocked came from, the intention behind it, going back to your question, is that throughout this next period of getting to know the yoga and meditation worlds, I was thinking I'd love to do something in meditation. For me, that's the practice that I think can have much more of an impact, because it's just more applicable to more people. It was, you know, that especially because of the way that I was finding my own experience with it. And over the winter, we established that I'm really into the snow, and I spend time in like Colorado and Utah and places like that. Mm-hmm. I piggyback trips to New York and LA onto those trips in the winter, and just had a good look at what's going on in the meditation scene, and then realized there's a massive gap in London. And that gap is that we don't have many offerings here that are really aimed at non-spiritual, non-yogi types. And it just became obvious to me that actually that would be a really good starting point, just to see what happens. Right. And Meditation Unlocked is still somewhat an experiment, and I'll get into that. And that was in January this year. And then from that point on, I decided, okay, if we're going to do an event series like this, I want it to be really credible. So I spent the next 6 months just really deepening and widening my own practice, reading loads of stuff around meditation, trying lots of different things, seeing a much wider variety of teachers, reading a lot of scientific stuff, marrying that scientific stuff up with various practices, because I knew that for the corporate crowd, which I self-identify as part of, at least for, you know, like what I do in the world, mm-hmm. I knew that the scientific side was going to be important, because these guys are looking for evidence bases. And the really interesting thing is that's what we're finding gets people through the door. Once they've had an experiential benefits of a couple of yoga, meditation practices, nobody cares about the science anymore. But that's what they need to get them through the door and justify. Well, you know, in a city like London, where it's so noisy, so many things to do. When I say noisy, I mean there's so many options, there's so many things competing for attention. People of a certain type need a rationale to come and do something. And what we're doing is we're providing them that rationale, providing them that evidence base. I guess answering their objections, because their objections around this kind of stuff is, it just seems a bit woo-woo and hippie and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, from my point of view, it may or may not be these things. I don't really care. What I care about is, how's it going to help me just be more effective and be a better person?
Yeah, wow, that is, it sounds like you really are truly creating a great service in a city where it is absolutely needed, and to the demographic that I think that's really important too.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're showing up for the people who are likely to not.
Well, they're just not that well catered for yet. There's stuff coming. There already is, and there's stuff coming. And actually, some of the other guys in that space, we all kind of know each other. It's all very collegiate, which is nice. From my point of view, the more credible options there are, the better. Mm. It's just like whatever. To give you an analogy, I used to be off the view that you've got these gimmicky forms of yoga that that don't look like yoga, and they seem like a bit of a, like, you know, things that are really easy to poke holes at, things like beer yoga, like, you know, what the hell is that? But then I got to this point where I realized, actually, if it's anatomically safe, if you're not putting people in danger in body or in mind, and we pay attention to that on the meditation side, we can talk about that later, and it's meeting somebody where they want to be met, then is that not a good thing? Because then if they want to go deeper, they will. I mean, in the West, yoga is, people come to it as a physical practice. They see it on a list of things at the gym. They see like spin, Pilates, TRX and yoga, and that's what they think it is. And I don't have an issue with that because it brings millions of people to the practice, mm-hmm. and then it opens a door. And that's very much the view that we've got with the meditation side. You know, we're not, I don't want to bastardize the practices. What we actually offer is very pure, in terms of the practices and the quality of them. But what we're doing is stripping away some of the barriers that other people perceive.
Right. Well, I think it's a beautiful reminder even to myself, where I have a very committed connection to spirit and a spiritual connection to my own yoga practice and my meditation practice. And it's important for me not to forget what you just said, because I first came to the practice as an exercise form, you know, and I think in that light, those who are interested and have a strong desire to seek further information from other teachers in other forms, the door is open for them. And I think that's a beautiful reminder. So that's awesome. And yeah, let's dive into the aspect of maybe the styles or the approach of meditation,
absolutely.
Of where you're coming from.
Yeah. So where we see things is that we talk about meditation in a singular because it's convenient, but actually I see meditation, the correct analogy, we use a physical analogy a lot because it's so relevant, but the correct analogy for meditation for me would be exercise or sports, i.e. it's an umbrella term under which we have a number of different practices. So I'd say that if we're really talking about meditation, what we're talking about is a series of different meditative practices that actually do different things in our brain, depending on what they are and so on. Like, you know, mindfulness is different from something else to something else to something else. We're trying to move away from the jargon because the jargon has connotations. In terms of our style, it's probably better for me to explain our format and what we've put together. So it's really important for me to, one, place this in central, beautiful locations. So easily accessible and desirable places people want to go to. This was inspired by seeing the likes of Inscape and Mindful in New York, but also just thinking about the way we're wired today. People only do things if they want to do them. It's not because I think this will be really good for me. Like, that's quite rare for most people. They've got to be engaged. So number one, that. Number two, making it super accessible. And the way we do that is our format is short. Our sessions are typically 45 to 50 minutes long. That will include, and we place it at times. So we do Monday, Tuesday evenings at the moment. We do like 6:45 or 7 p.m. So the idea is we're creating this space between work and whatever else where people can drop in, do that, but it doesn't take over the whole evening. So there's still time to go for dinner or go home and chill or go back to work or whatever, right? Because one of the problems I saw with other similar events in this space is that they're 2-3 hours long and it ends up taking off over the whole evening. Now for the corporate types, my lawyer and banker and entrepreneur friends, it's like that isn't going to work. So that's the wrapper that goes around it. In terms of what actually happens, it's quite simple. We spend 3 or 4 minutes at the start of every session basically getting people comfortable, like busting some of the myths around meditation, like you must sit statue still and you must clear your mind. I mean, I would love for someone to teach me how to clear my mind. It's exactly the same as the people who don't do yoga because they're not flexible enough. Yeah. You know, as a yogi, we look down on that, but it's important to understand where that comes from. So we spend 2-3 minutes doing that, getting people comfortable. Then we go straight into a 25-30 minute guided meditation, live guided. That's really important because it makes it really easy for people. That guided meditation, we try and touch on two or three different things. We have a different theme every week. It might be meditation and anxiety, meditation and sleep, meditation and creativity. But that guided piece will always touch on two, maybe three areas. One is accessing deep rest. So that's just where we will do things like focus on the breath or body, just slow the system down, activate the parasympathetic nervous system, etc., etc. Induce the relaxation response. The next piece is training attention. So that's where we will bring some of the more mindfulness oriented practices in, whether it's specifically focused attention or open monitoring or whatever it is, doesn't really matter so much. It's more about giving somebody a basic idea of how these things work. And we always work with two or three different approaches. It might be visual, it might be audio, whatever. And then the last bit is, we always touch on a bit of connection-based practices. So again, in our terminology, it would be like loving kindness or metta or that kind of thing. And the reason for that is, one, we live in a city where people feel very isolated. You know, the irony is there's like 9 million and growing, but everyone feels really isolated now. People don't feel listened to, acknowledged, heard. So this is a way of recreating that connection and really taking advantage of the group experience, but in a non-threatening way, because what people find threatening is things like eye-gazing meditations or having to talk to a stranger or that kind of thing, right? Especially in this reserved British culture. So we touch on it partly for that reason, because there's logical sense to it, but also because there's a growing body of scientific stuff around age and age-related, cellular aging and age-related diseases and so on. So that's the practice. And then we come out of that. We spend the last 15 minutes of the session having a little discussion on, okay, what is the science around this? And we take a robust look at the science. We cite specific journals, in a super accessible way. And we don't just accept, hey, this is science, because I think there's too much of that goes on in the well-being industry. It's more a case of, actually, let's take a proper look at the science and what's the validity of this, of these trials. Like, was it 20 people over 1 week, or was it 2,000 people over 6 months, and were the controls done properly, and is there a body that's willing to sit behind it that has some credibility and so on. But we don't go too deep into that stuff, but it's important to acknowledge it. And then the last part of that sort of 10-15 minutes is talking about a couple of practical ideas. How can you incorporate these things into your life? Because I think that's really important to give people something they can go away with. So that's the experience. That consistency is there regardless of who's leading the practice, where that practice is happening. But then, of course, it changes based on the teacher, changes based on the venue, changes based on the mood of the crowd. Right. We always stick around for a bit of, you know, we're available for 15 minutes afterwards for questions. There's always lots of questions. And then the other side of Meditation Unlocked is the online community that we're building, which, you know, that sounds really grand. What it means is we send an email out twice a week. What that contains is we will share like short guided meditations or a TED talk or a article or a book recommendation. But again, it's all had our filter on it in terms of like, is this accessible? Does it stand up to scrutiny? Is it something that people can consume very easily? Because a lot of people who are signed up to our list are people who are interested in meditation, but they haven't necessarily taken a step to come to a session or something like that. And that's pretty much the whole offering. The only other things that are worth pointing out is, we're working with a handful of different meditation guides from different backgrounds. That's important. Like, you know, we're not set on a specific style or system. Cool. We have a hookup with a mental health charity called Mind, which is the UK's leading mental health charity. And the reason for that, there's sort of two things. One is that it's really important for us to have someone we can refer people to, because if we look at the spectrum of mental health, from at one end of the scale, I'm a little bit overwhelmed, a little bit stressed, a little bit anxious. That's most people in London. All the way through to I've got a serious, you know, I'm dealing with something serious from a psychological point of view. At that scale, at that end, we can't help people at that end, and it's actually dangerous for them to come to our session. So we have a really clear mental health disclaimer, all that kind of stuff. You cannot reserve a space on one of our sessions without having checked that disclaimer. But if we're going to have things like that, then we also need to be able to say, actually, this is where you can go to for some help. So we have that charity hookup, and we also have a clinical advisor who She's an arrhythmia nurse and yoga cancer therapist who works in London's leading hospitals, and part of her role is designing bespoke yoga and meditation programs for cancer patients. So she looks at what we're putting out there, and actually, like, the main thing she does is make sure that I don't say anything really stupid. You know, that's really important for me to have. So, you know, there's a nice little community of facilitators, professionals, event hosts, like, who are all pulling in together to build, you know, you said it yourself, a platform. Like, this is not, this is about building something that can affect a lot of people, and we'll do that through events and through developing our online.
That's amazing. I love it. So what have you found, what's something that arose from it? I'm curious, what is one of the most interesting, we could call it scientific facts, or some of the things that you've discovered through those articles that you were sharing in the sessions?
Yeah. Can you share something? I think the one that seems to get the best reaction is when we start talking about telomeres and Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn. Are you familiar with this?
No.
Okay, so Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn won the Nobel Prize for Medicine a few years ago for her research around cellular aging, and she was the first person who had been able to link cellular aging to mind-body practices as part of this work. And earlier this year, she released a book for anyone listening that's called The Telomere Effect, Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn, well worth a read. And this was to do with the effect of meditative practices on cellular aging and age-related diseases. So one of the ways that we explain it is that, you know, of what's happening for us mentally affects our physical aging in a way that's not linked to our chronological age. So a good example of that is, like, if you know somebody and you know they've been through some really deep trauma, like, you know, they're like, it's horrible, but, like, you know, their spouse dies or a child dies or something like that, you know, something really deep and tragic, and you don't, you know, it happens and you see them 6 months later and they look like they've aged 10 years. The reason for that is because they have aged 10 years from a cellular point of view. And what this body of research shows that through these practices, we can curb some of those effects. So that's why, you know, you get a lot of yogis and meditators who look so much younger than they actually are. Right. That's partly the reason. Part of the other reason is because they probably choose not to be stressed and so on and so forth. But even so, the way we package that one up is just, you know, we talk about meditation as an alternative to Botox, and that always gets a good laugh. But it's rooted in scientific fact, and it's an interesting body. Yeah.
Wow, that's a really cool book, and we'll definitely link that into the description. So thank you for that. That's awesome. Wow, well, I'm really loving the depth of where meditation unlocked. And I think one of my favorite things that you've said is that you have multiple approaches or styles of teaching. You know, I think many of the teachers that I have interviewed have aligned themselves with one style of meditation. And for me, I've gone from multiple styles of meditation to being where I am now and incorporating a various amount of little nuggets from each style. So, you know, I'm curious.
It's an interesting subject. I think for somebody to be a true subject matter expert, they need to go deep. And that's why we find lots of meditators or yogis even who are very deep into one particular school of thought or philosophy. But that's partly what we look for, right? We're looking for, like, functional experts. But as an overall picture for Meditation Unlocked, it makes sense for us to have lots of different people like that, in the same way that in a yoga studio you would find people who are deep into yin or rocket or ashtanga or yenga or whatever, right? It's the same thing, but the only difference is, from a meditation point of view, at least in London, we don't yet understand that meditation is not a singular thing. There's not one meditation, it's a number of different practices akin to, I would argue, it's as different as swimming is to cycling, is to rock climbing, is to weight training. They're all physically beneficial in the same way, like, any credible meditation style is mentally beneficial, but they are actually doing different things. So we're looking for people who, we're looking to incorporate several of those things because we're looking for a fully rounded offering.
Cool. Can you share some, I'm curious, like, specific approaches or styles that have different benefits?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I think we try and keep things simple and super accessible. And So to answer that question, simple things like just learning to focus on one's breath, we do a lot of that kind of thing because it's so accessible. Like, people can do that by themselves. So it's something they can take away, and we can say, well, look, this can be a 5-minute practice and whatever. I think for London, that one is really important because slowing down our system is how we can access our parasympathetic nervous system, how we can access rest and healing functions and so on. But why it becomes so important is because we're overstimulated in this city, and we have 24/7 access to our smartphones. So we have all this information and stuff at our fingertips and entertainment, which is wonderful. But the cost of that is that too much of that is not a good thing. So the way we talk about that is, it's well accepted that if we just push ourselves physically all the time, day in, day out, and we don't rest and we don't get the right nutrition and we don't get the right sleep, then our body is going to break down. That's a given fact. Like, we cannot push it and not expect to happen. But yet that's what we're doing with our minds. But by incorporating these kind of deliberate rest type practices, we can start regulating that and become even more effective. So I think that's a really great practice, and we always have some focus on that. And it might, you know, it's not always a breath. It might be moving around mm-hmm. different parts of the body. Mm-hmm. But the beauty of that, whilst we're doing that, the breath in particular, when we start focusing on the breath, it just starts slowing down anyway. Mm-hmm. But the beauty of that particular practice is that it's also starting to delve into some of the mindfulness stuff, like present moment awareness and training attention and training focus. Because if I'm going to make a shopping list of like problems in London today, mm-hmm. number one is that people just aren't rested. Number two, we're over distracted. People are losing the ability to focus. So if we go back to why I'm into this kind of stuff or why I got into it in the first place, I do see meditation at the peak level as an entrepreneurial secret weapon, because it helps me to be more productive. It helps me to be more focused. It helps me to be more creative.
I love that. Creativity and focus and productive. That's a beautiful byproduct of sitting still.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's just, I just think that in this world, 2017, we've just kind of lost what was there naturally when we mm-hmm. just didn't have all these options. There was a time where, not so long ago, where we didn't have internet, we had 4 TV channels, and that meant that actually you spent time having dinner with your family and talking to them and then reading a book, and you know, all these things that are considered mindful activities now, they were normal activities a few years ago. Right. And it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. Wow, so what do you think is one of the greatest tips, if you will, that you could offer someone who's looking to, you know, I'm sure many of our listeners have dabbled with meditation and may have a very consistent meditation practice. What is one of the greatest offerings, a tip that you could offer to someone who wants to embark onto a daily meditation practice?
If we're talking about in terms of your listeners, because they're mostly going to be yogis who have some understanding of meditation, have dabbled in it and so on. If we're talking specifically to that crowd, honestly, I would say if you want to get into meditation, just commit for a period of time. Like, I think dabbling is a dangerous thing because it's useful to put a toe in to get a sense of something. Mm. But actually, if you really want to know, then I'm talking about just like maybe 7 days or 14 days. Just decide you're going to have a meditation practice for 10 minutes a day for those 7 days. Schedule it in your calendar, like a meeting with somebody else. Try and build some accountability into it. I mean, this has got nothing to do with meditation. This has got everything to do with habit, which I think is actually what's lacking. I don't think your listeners need more information. That's not what's going to change anything. It's actually looking at things in a different way. And that is, commit, find a partner, go to a group like Meditation Unlocked, or go to the Buddhist center or whatever. Like, even if it's something that you're not really into, but just decide that for, you know, sort of set 7 days or 14 days you're going to do that. And I think that's the best way, like learning by doing, rather than I think there's a real danger of over theorizing on things.
I love that so much. That's beautiful. Yeah, I think making a powerful choice and just committing.
And it's, you know, what my belief is, like, do something properly or don't do it at all. And, and I believe that in every asana, in everything, like, you know, if you're going to do Warrior 2, then do it properly or don't do it at all.
Yeah.
Right. Like I think if you can make that kind of linear choice in your life and become conscious, then it just makes life easier.
Okay, so here's another question. What would you offer the listeners who are teachers and who do share meditation either solely as an offering? Like, I know some beautiful Vedic meditation teachers.
I love Vedic.
It's a beautiful practice. And maybe also other teachers who incorporate into their asana practices at the end or before of classes. What's something that you'd offer them?
Offer them in what sense? To offer help them be more effective, or?
Well, actually, let's rephrase the question. And for the business entrepreneurs in the work, the daily workload people who are coming to your practices, for these people who are showing up in the yoga room, for some of our listeners who are teachers, what is something that you would offer? Because you have a lot of experience with these people. Like, you identify as
I am
someone,
one. Yeah.
You're a corporate man.
Yeah.
So What's something that you'd offer the listening yogi who teaches someone like you?
It's a really good question. I want to take some care in how I answer it, because I think it's really important that every person who's leading, guiding, teaching yoga, meditation, or whatever it is, if you're teaching a course on Excel or investment, it doesn't matter. I think it's really important to be yourself, which is the most simplistic thing to say and so hard to do. So the reason I want to be careful is because I'm not saying, I don't think you should change what you're doing just to accommodate somebody who's in the room. I think especially in cities like London, there's so many different offerings that there's something for everyone. But if somebody is thinking, I would like to address those people specifically, I want to like make sure they're incorporated. It's a really tricky one, but people on the corporate side, entrepreneur side, who are sort of wired like me, we like facts, we like detail, we don't like over fluffiness. So it's, I think practicality is there, and it could even be something as simple as, if you want to find out more about how you can incorporate these ideas into your daily life, come and have a chat with me afterwards. That kind of thing.
Cool.
I also think, as a general thing, we get into a slightly more generalization. I really respect the yoga teachers and the meditation teachers who build into their schedule to be available for 15 minutes after a class instead of running off to teach the next one, because I think that shows a commitment to their students. I think that shows a respect for their students, where they're just really willing to be there for them. And the guys who I see doing that, they're the ones who have the loyal followings.
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely critical. You know, I mean, I think that's one of the greatest ways into service. Like, yes, we can share in a group setting. And also, I've always found that the real transmission and the real potency for me occurs in a one-on-one conversation where, I get to bear witness to your experience and honor your experience by listening and maybe reflecting, or I don't have anything to reflect. You just needed someone to listen to. You know,
Totally. I mean, that's why Meditation Unlocked has started as a live event series, because we could film this online in a beautiful studio, put it online, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, there's other people doing stuff like that. And I think the beauty of that is it takes away the distribution problem. It means that geography is not a barrier, time's not a barrier. But the reason I wanted to start in live events was so we had that person-to-person interaction. Because coming back to the fact that meditation in non-spiritual, non-yogi, non-religious settings is underdeveloped in this city, the first thing for me was to actually get a sense of, well, what does this city really need? And the best way that I could think of to do that in a non-risky way, without spending hundreds of thousands of pounds to open a studio in central London, which is something that somebody should do and will do, rather than doing that, I thought, if we do an event series, then I can start testing and experimenting in a few ways. And the first of these is, are people who are not traditionally into these things willing to pay money and spend an hour of their time with us? That was the first thing. Now, I was pretty sure they would be, but it needs to be tested. The more important thing is to get a sense of, well, who's coming, why are they coming, and what are they really looking for? Mm-hmm. And we can only find that out with that one-to-one interaction, those chats afterwards. And they have been so fulfilling and informing, and we've changed our timings, our formats, we've dropped things, we've added things as a reaction to that. And as a result of that, our sessions have got better and better and better. But also it's that satisfaction of, I think this is the fuel for anyone who's kind of sharing this kind of stuff. When somebody comes up to you and says, you know, I really wasn't sure about that, and I've tried stuff like this before, but now I really got it. Mm-hmm. And something that Ashley or Natalie or one of our other meditation guides said, that really resonated. And it sometimes it's really simple stuff, like realizing they have the permission to change their position and move around or open their eyes or whatever. And it's like, because I had that freedom, now I got it. And I think by not doing things in a live setting, that's what we lose. And going back to what you were saying, by teaching a class and then rushing off to teach the next one, you lose that opportunity not only to be there for your students, but also to get that fuel that replenishes you, or get a piece of feedback that's like, hey, hang on a second, maybe we need to think about that.
Yeah.
And then make your offering even better.
Yeah. I think there's a real level of like that nourishment and restoration, you know?
Yeah.
And then at that point, it's not all about you, you know?
No, not at all.
That's not why we're doing this.
Not at all. Yeah.
You know, and I think that one thing I've always asked myself is like, what matters most to me? Why am I here? I love the question that you were asking yourself in your late 20s. You're like, why am I on this planet? Like,
yeah, the existential crisis. Yeah.
You know, it's like Saturn's return. It's coming in hot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's such a beautiful reminder, you know, to ask ourselves, how can I be of service? And I think that I feel that you're really creating something beautiful of service here.
You just reminded me of something else that we've been talking about a little bit. And it's this idea of transitions in the day. And again, this is interesting for anybody, whether they're a sharer of yoga or meditation, or they're just like, you know, they've just got like a regular job and they're interested in these things or whatever. And this has been quite a powerful one for me. And the reason you triggered it will become apparent in a second. It's this idea that when we have a transition in our day, so when I go from like doing some work on a computer to Alex coming over to interview me or whatever, that's a transition. And then when you're gone from here, I'll move into the next thing. That's another transition. Actually building in a couple of minutes to just sit and breathe and release whatever tension is there and whatever. And then taking 30 seconds to think about, okay, this next thing I'm about to do, what is my intention and how do I want to feel and what do I want to get out of it? And it's just a way of resetting and making sure that we're having a full experience. And for me, that in the end, that's just what life is about. It's like making the most of what we're here, rather than the way that Facebook and Instagram would rather have us screwed up. And, you know, I'd be sitting here doing this interview with you whilst I'm checking my messages and so on. It's just about that reminder that going back to, if I'm going to do something, do it properly.
Right.
And I think that's going back to a previous question, what kind of tools are interesting or useful? That's like a massive one.
Well, you know, I'll respond to that with a trigger within me that just came up, and a beautiful trigger. It was a beautiful point of awareness. It's, actively listening to who's in front of us, where I'll say I'm fully guilty of this
sometimes. Hey, we all are
you know, sometimes I'm having a conversation and I'm looking at my phone and like 60% listening, which is like, I'm not listening to you, like I want to be, so let me put my phone away and I apologize, let me be present with you, because you deserve that and I deserve that. I deserve to give that, my full presence to you. So I think that is also a byproduct of a practice.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, for me, what it all comes down to in the end is about sort of conscious choice. So whatever we're doing, let's be conscious of why we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And you know, if somebody wants to be the biggest jerk in the world, but they've consciously decided that's what they're going to be, I might not like that, but I can respect it. I can respect that a hell of a lot more than I'm just going to do whatever, you know, whatever whim or fantasy takes me to, and I don't know why.
Well, Niraj, this has been such a beautiful conversation, and thank you so much for sharing your gifts and revealing to us how meditation and yoga has created such a beautiful pathway in your life to share your heart and your being. And
absolutely. Thank you. You know, I really appreciate this. I still consider myself as an absolute baby in some of these things, and really excited to see how Meditation Unlocked develops, how I develop next to it. But what we're hoping is that one way or another, we can build a movement that really helps people manage their minds a little bit better and understand that relationship a bit better, and just help them have a happier experience. Because ultimately, I think this is a good point for me to end on. What I've realized is what I'm really building here is a performance optimization business that happens to do meditation events at this stage and happens to be in the meditation field. But what we're really interested in is mental well-being, all facets of it. And the other side is, and this is something we understood from day one, which I think is critical, the business we're really in is just helping people feel good or feel better. That's all it comes down to. The way we're doing that is what informs our choice of venue and music and format and event and how all that works. But it's really everyone who's involved understands that actually our fundamental job is to help people feel better. And that's why we do little things like that I don't see so many others doing. Like at the end of our sessions, there will be somebody at the door who greets everybody on their way out and says, thank you for coming and thanks for being here, and acknowledges and makes eye contact with every single person. And that's just as a safety net to make sure that everybody feels like they've been paid attention to.
Wow, I love that. Wow, that's beautiful. And I think that's an awesome way to close with the final question we always ask is, what is a golden nugget of wisdom that you would send off to our listeners as they carry on with their day or they just begin their days?
Oh my God. I think for me, it's just life is fragile. I came so close to death or incapacitation at a fairly young age. And it's just from that day on, that realization that we're here for such a fleeting time. We're, you know, actually, I still wonder whether we're really quite insignificant in the bigger scheme of things, like the way I try to look at it. I mean, again, this is my sort of logical, analytical, data-driven mind. I sometimes find it hard to believe we're anything more than over-evolved apes on a dying rock screaming around a dying star. And I think, so when we put that into context, like whatever we're here to do and whatever we want to do, just make it count, make the most, choose to be happy, choose to do good things, choose to make an impact on the world. I get asked a lot, why should people do yoga or why should people meditate? And I always say, I don't think they should necessarily. I think they should do what makes them happy and what's going to make a positive impact on the world.
Love life and shine on. I love that. Yes. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you. Namaste. Thank you, Alec. Friend. Namaste.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time, slowing down, and listening to this episode and seeking how you can integrate meditation into your day, no matter where you are in the world. It is a true blessing to be sharing the gift of yoga with you. This is Alec Vishal Rubin, and I feel honored to be realizing my mission on this planet and accessing its truth and wisdom through the transmission of this podcast. Following our hearts will always bring us into the illumination of whatever path we want to choose to walk down, and this is a gift that daily meditation and consistent practice has produced for Niraj, his community, and also for me. If you're in London, feel free to check out Niraj's social media links in the blog description. And stay tuned over the next few weeks as I will record an episode and share what it's been like for me to enter a graduate degree program that navigates the deep depths of yoga and moving to a foreign country. It has been nearly a year since I recorded my episode back in India, and I'm so excited to give you guys an update. May your day be blessed, filled with miracles, and steeped in love for the life we get to live. Until next time. practice strong, and live light. This is your brother from Colorado, living in London, Alec Vishal Rubin. Namaste.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.